there. Today is Thursday, July the 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, more speakers, protests, and intrigue as the Republican National Convention continues.
And quite frankly, friends, vote for the one candidate who does not need this job.
Donald Trump standing alone among all world leaders on one major global issue. The U.S. hosts a 30-nation meeting on how to take down the Islamic State terror group. Also ahead, newly discovered planets outside our solar system that scientists say could support life. It's all on today's International Edition. Make America First Again, the theme for day three of the Republican National Convention. Vice presidential nominee Indiana Governor Mike Pence took the stage along with other key figures, including former House Speaker Newt Gingrich and former Trump rivals, Florida Senator Marco Rubio and Texas Senator Ted Cruz, who told attendees to vote their conscience, but he didn't endorse Trump.
If you love our country and love your children as much as I know that you do, stand and speak and vote your conscience. Vote for candidates up and down the ticket who you trust to defend our freedom and to be faithful to the Constitution.
Donald Trump's son, Eric, also making the case for his father.
13 months ago, my father sat my family down and told us the time had come. He could no longer sit idly by and watch our beloved country, the country that had given our family so much success, so much opportunity, crumble before our very eyes.
All right, let's talk more about the day's events with VOA correspondent Catherine Gibson. She is live from the convention in Ohio. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Lori. How are you?
I'm good. Boy, things really got going tonight. Lots of energy from what we could see here in the studio. Tell us what stood out for you.
That is absolutely right. Each night gets more and more intense, and this was certainly a night because we had three of the former presidential candidates speaking at the convention tonight, including, of course, as you heard, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, who did not end up endorsing Donald Trump. That was an interesting moment on the convention floor. I was watching in my section as some Trump supporters shouted to him, shut up and go home. They were very, very upset, visibly upset, that he didn't end up endorsing Donald Trump in his speech.
It looked as though former House Speaker Newt Gingrich made reference to that.
He did, yes. And he tried to encourage things and calm things down, but from my viewpoint on the convention floor, that may not be possible. I talked to a lot of very upset Trump supporters on that end.
What about the overall mood compared to, say, other conventions you've attended in the past?
You know, I don't have that same sense of party unity. I've been talking to some Ted Cruz supporters, Trump supporters, even people who supported Ohio Governor John Kasich, and I'm really not getting that sense that everything has come together the way they need it to at a party convention.
Now, do you think his children, Donald Trump's children, so far we've heard both of his sons speak and one of his daughters, do you think that they've made the case for him, for their father? Have they humanized him?
I don't know if they've done a great job humanizing him, you know, especially as it was in Melania Trump's speech. We didn't hear a lot of personal stories, but we certainly got glowing testimonials talking about what a wonderful father he was. And I know that does resonate with a lot of Trump supporters who say, you know, look at the family, look at the man, look at how he's raised his children. That will tell you a lot about him.
Were there more protests?
There were, although I was not able to get out to those personally today. The rest of the VOA News team was out there and saw some arrests and definitely saw some intense clashes out in downtown Cleveland.
And so what can we expect for the final night tomorrow?
Well, if tonight was intense, then tomorrow night will be 10 times that. You know, we will have Donald Trump finally accept the nomination for the Republican presidential nomination, and I expect a very lively crowd on the convention floor.
Well, we appreciate your keeping us up to date on what's happening there and your perspective. Catherine Gibson is our VOA congressional correspondent, live from the convention in Cleveland, Ohio. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Well, Donald Trump is known for being an outsider and doing things his way. And a new report from the U.S.-based environmental group, the Sierra Club, finds that if president, Donald Trump would stand alone when it comes to climate change. Joining me now to talk more about this, climate scientist Dr. John Abraham, a professor at St. Thomas University in the state of Minnesota. Dr. Abraham, thanks for your time. What exactly did the Sierra Club report suggest?
And what they found was striking. Donald Trump is a standout amongst all leaders in this report and in the world. He is the one who thinks that climate change and the climate science is a hoax, and he is the only one who is not prepared to take this threat seriously.
As a climate scientist, what do you think about when you see something like this?
Well, it concerns me for a number of reasons. First and foremost, this is bad for the environment. We've made tremendous strides over the past few years to go from the world laggard to the world leader in climate change. We have these international agreements with other countries that are really tough agreements, but we're making great progress toward meeting our objectives. Secondly, it's bad business. What we are finding with climate change and renewable energy is the prices are dropping so fast that it just makes economic sense to move into the renewable energy industry. And to have someone demonize climate scientists and suggest that climate change isn't something we should be concerned about suggests that that person isn't committed to clean, affordable, renewable energy. And if we aren't committed to that, we are going to be buying solar panels and wind turbines from China. We're not going to be selling them our solar panels and wind turbines. So it's just bad business.
And what about the coal industry? You know, there's been a lot of talk about that. He's been very supportive of the coal industry and struggling coal miners.
Well, and that's great to be supportive of people whose livelihoods are at risk. Coal has taken a tremendous beating recently. But, you know, it's not due to climate change. It's due to the fact that coal can't compete financially. And so if you are someone who's a fiscal conservative and you want to bring electrons to your house at the lowest possible cost with the lowest ecological damage, coal is not the winner. Coal loses both economically and ecologically.
What are other climate scientists saying about this? Are they concerned?
We have a situation where someone is casting doubt on science in general and specific areas of science in particular. In order to stay at the leading edge of the world economy, the United States has to invest in science that bring the next iPhone, the next wireless communication. And if we have a party being headed by someone who casts aspersions and doubts on scientists and calls science fraud or hoax, then it suggests we're not willing to put the investment in the things that we need to stay economically viable. Climate scientists are surely concerned because we see the big issues with the changing climate. It's going to cost us a lot.
Donald Trump, if elected, has promised that he would renegotiate America's position in the legally binding Paris Accord signed by all participating nations at the inaugural of the Paris Climate Change Conference last year. What would that do to the efforts worldwide for climate change?
Boy, that's a good question. I'll be honest with you. I don't fully know the answer to that, but I will tell you what I know. If we back out of this binding agreement on climate change, we're going to lose our leverage with the people that we've struck excellent agreements with. And how can you negotiate with people and how can you get them to do things that you want if you have no leverage? So losing our leverage is a big deal. Secondly, we're going to lose economically because, frankly, we're going to meet our Paris Agreement targets because we're revolutionizing the energy industry in the United States. We're delivering lower cost, lower emission energy. And if we back out of that agreement and relax our push toward this new energy economy, we're not even going to be players in the economy. And we're going to lose billions and billions of dollars. So we'll lose politically, we'll lose scientifically, and we'll lose economically.
Do you think he'll also potentially turn back some of the environmental protections that we have in place now?
I think it's almost certain he would. What's happened over the last 6 to 8 years is nothing's gotten through Congress. And basically, our progress on climate change has happened through the Environmental Protection Agency. And I don't see how any of those environmental protection agreements would continue in a Trump presidency. And Republicans are not anti-science. The National Science Foundation was set up by a Republican. But now we're being led by a standard bearer who is so stridently anti-science. And that is a bitter pill to swallow.
Well, we appreciate your perspective. Dr. John Abraham, climate scientist at the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota. Another big topic on social media today, the deepening feud between Donald Trump and his former rival, Ohio Governor John Kasich, who is not attending the Republican National Convention in his home state. Michael Lippin is here with more. Michael, why is this dispute getting so much attention?
Hi, Lori. Well, one of the top trending items on Facebook today in the United States was an allegation that Donald Trump's son, Donald Jr., offered Kasich the post of Trump's running mate. And that's not all. The alleged offer would make Kasich the country's most powerful vice president ever if Trump won the election, because Trump would be a rather hands-off president, delegating foreign and domestic policy mostly to Kasich.
Where did these allegations come from?
Well, these allegations were reported in several U.S. news outlets on Wednesday, including the New York Times and CNN, who both quoted unnamed aides of the Ohio governor. Those aides said that Donald Jr. made the alleged offer to a Kasich aide shortly after Kasich dropped out of the race for the Republican presidential nomination in May. Now, those reports drew swift and angry denials from the Trump campaign, including from Trump himself on Twitter. He posted this brief message: John Kasich was never asked by me to be VP.
What are Facebook users making of this new argument between the two men?
Well, you've got people who sympathize with both of them commenting on CNN's Facebook post of its story titled Trump-Kasich Feud Over Most Powerful VP Offer. Here's a post from user Laura Plum Hillman. She says, I have much respect for Governor Kasich for not even attending the GOP convention. He realizes the danger that Trump is to this country and to the world, and he didn't sell out like other Republicans. He is way too classy to be associated with Trump. And then we have an opposing view from Facebook user Mary Kingston. She says, the John Kasich camp is leaking a lot of information that could be fabricated. Many say Kasich is just a sore loser and a grudge holder. If he had class, he would have shown up for at least 15 minutes at the Republican convention and wished his party well. Now, the convention has one more day to go, so I guess it's not impossible that Kasich could still show up. But having yet another fight break out between these two guys makes it even less likely, I think. Lori?
All right. Well, thanks so much, Michael. You can follow him at Michael_Lippin. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Hillary Clinton's vice presidential pick announcement expected this week. President Obama presses for development initiatives to continue beyond his presidency. Doctors Without Borders reports a humanitarian catastrophe in Nigeria's Borno state. A cholera outbreak suspected in beleaguered South Sudan. And the world sees hope in ending mother-to-child HIV transmissions. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. International Edition continues now. Turkey's crackdown following last week's failed military coup continues to widen. Tuesday, it banned academics from traveling abroad. The government also suspended thousands of state education workers, tens of thousands of other civil servants, including security force members and judges, have been detained, questioned, or fired. The government says exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen orchestrated the effort and is demanding he be extradited from the United States. Gulen has condemned the coup attempt and denied any involvement. White House spokesman Josh Earnest on Tuesday said Presidents Obama and Erdogan discussed the extradition matter and materials sent by the Turkish government are being reviewed.
And the Department of Justice and the Department of State will review those materials consistent with the requirements of the extradition treaty between the United States and Turkey that's been on the books for more than 30 years now. But the president also made clear a couple of other things. The first is that the United States doesn't support terrorists. The United States doesn't support individuals who conspire to overthrow democratically elected governments. The United States follows the rule of law. And as it relates to Mr. Gulen's status, there is a process that is established in the extradition treaty that we will follow. There also is due process to which people who live in the United States are entitled. And we'll make sure that that due process is followed as well. The decision about Mr. Gulen's status and the decision to extradite him is not a decision that is made by the President of the United States. It is a legal decision that is made pursuant to a legal process, part of which is codified in a long-standing treaty between the United States and Turkey.
Also on Wednesday, Turkey's president declared a 3-month state of emergency following the botched coup attempt. Defense ministers from more than 30 countries have reviewed and agreed upon the next steps for taking on the Islamic State terror group in its final strongholds. Following the meeting Wednesday at Joint Base Andrews outside Washington, D.C., U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter used the meeting to determine strategies to accelerate the campaign in the terror group's strongholds of Mosul, Iraq, and Raqqa, Syria.
From every direction and in every domain, our campaign has accelerated further, squeezing ISIL and rolling it back towards Raqqa and Mosul. By isolating these two cities, we're effectively setting the stage to collapse ISIL's control over them. Thanks to the hard work and sacrifice of our local partners and our service members, and more contributions from the nations that met here today, we've seized opportunities, reinforced success, taken the fight to the enemy. But we're not going to rest. Today, we reviewed and agreed on the next plays in our campaign, which, of course, we won't discuss publicly yet. But let me be clear, they culminate in the collapse of ISIL's control over the cities of Mosul and Raqqa.
Also on Wednesday, Secretary of State John Kerry hosted a conference to raise $2 billion for Iraq as it retakes territory from the terror organization. He also talked about some of the challenges for civilians returning home.
There are extraordinary dangers in that going back because refrigerators, closets, beds, rooms have been left with IEDs. And a significant number of people in the hundreds, multiple hundreds, have lost their lives simply in the act of trying to go back into their home.
You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
The political party convention is a critical part of the American electoral process. VOA correspondents are there, reporting the latest developments.
Jim Malone, VOA News in Cleveland.
Catherine Gibson in Cleveland, VOA News.
Tune in to VOA's extensive, up-to-the-minute coverage of the U.S. presidential election.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on the Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This is VOA's International Edition.
And that is confirmed capture of the SpaceX Dragon cargo vehicle on its commercial resupply mission 9.
Well, the SpaceX rocket finally making good on its delivery of a space station docking port. A Dragon capsule arrived at the International Space Station Wednesday morning, bearing more than 2 tons of supplies. The newly arrived science experiments include a DNA decoder that will be used by the first virus hunter in space, NASA astronaut Kate Rubins. Meanwhile, NASA's Kepler Space Telescope has made a big discovery. Joining us to talk about that, NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Ambassador Greg Redfern. Greg, what have astronomers discovered?
astronomers have discovered planets, exoplanets, that are outside of our solar system. We have found other star systems in our Milky Way galaxy that have whole systems of planets. They've discovered some stars that have one planet, some stars with four. They come in sizes larger than Jupiter, some a little bit larger than Earth, and we have not yet found what we could say is another Earth. But it is an exciting time. There are thousands of confirmed planets outside of our solar system.
I understand two of them could potentially support life. What do we know about that?
They try to get an idea of what are the conditions under which these planets orbit their parent star. Potentially, two of these could be conducive to life. And something that our listeners may not be aware of is that the Hubble Space Telescope just recently made observations of two exoplanets' atmospheres, that these two worlds were observed and were found to have atmospheres, and Hubble made observations of those atmospheres around those two planets. That was groundbreaking. And they're hoping to go back and make more observations of these atmospheres on these planets to determine what is in there. Is there potentially water?
Obviously, everybody wants to know if there's life outside of this planet. And you have to kind of figure, we're just this tiny little planet in this universe of solar systems that we haven't even discovered yet. So what do you think the likelihood that there is another Earth-type planet with Earth-type people on it?
I can't say about Earth-like people. That I can't say. What I can say, we have found that water exists everywhere we look. To be able to develop life of any kind, from singular cellular animals, creatures, all the way up to quote-unquote intelligent beings, you got to have a couple things, Lori. You got to have a star to provide power and light, energy and light. You got to have a planet so that can evolve under whatever biological processes would operate on that planet. And you got to have time. So it is estimated that every star in our Milky Way galaxy, which there are hundreds of billions, could have a minimum of 10 planets for each star. You do the math, you're looking at trillions of potential planets in our Milky Way galaxy, and there has to be other life out there. It just can't, I find it impossible to believe that we, in this entire galaxy, and then the observable universe, are the only life forms out there. And NASA has a whole division of study called astrobiology and the search for extraterrestrial intelligence to see if there is any quote-unquote life out there. And we go to Mars, we go to some of these moons and the outer planets of Saturn and Jupiter, we may find life someday, who knows?
All right. Well, we appreciate it. NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Ambassador Greg Redfern, thanks so much. Speaking of space, around the world, independent artists and musicians are wrestling with a common problem: where to exhibit or perform. Traditional spaces such as museums and galleries are reserved for bigger names, and renting a space is not feasible for many. Enter Arts Up, which connects artists with venue owners, whether it's a living room, restaurant, office, or even a boat. Pop-up events are bringing music and art to unexpected places. Tina Trin has more.
Andrea Carafa can speak several languages, among them English.
Hi, my name is Andrea Carafa.
French.
Je m'appelle Andrea Carafa.
And Spanish.
Hola, me llamo Andrea Carafa.
But to him, the most universal one is that of music and the arts. With this language, the barriers are physical.
There is a big issue that we are facing, and this is access to space. Cultural venues have been disappearing in most of the big cities due to skyrocketing rents.
For up-and-coming artists, lack of space makes it even harder to get their work displayed. But Carafa realized there were plenty of untapped spaces,
like our living rooms, backyards, stores, and so on. These spaces are there. We just have to share them and use them.
To that end, he created ArtsUp, an online platform that pairs artists with venue owners willing to host events in their space.
It allows you to host a concert, an exhibition, theater, or dance show.
At these pop-up art events, artists sell tickets, accept donations, and most importantly, introduce their work to new fans.
Every host is inviting friends, so this is a new audience for every artist.
For Carafa, who founded the startup while at Stanford University, ArtsUp is a labor of love.
It's really hard to be an entrepreneur. You work very hard, you work a lot, and you can keep going only if you're passionate.
His passion has brought unique events to four continents and 16 cities around the world, connecting local communities with a world they previously may have felt estranged from.
Some people told us we don't usually go to exhibitions or other kind of shows in very traditional settings because we don't feel it's for us. It removes any social and sociocultural barrier which you might have in other kinds of settings, like in museums or in art galleries.
For these attendees, the best experiences are the kind that just pop up. Tina Trin, VOA News, Stanford.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Researchers have determined an asteroid that smashed into the moon some 3.8 billion years ago to form the Imbrium Impact Basin was more than 241 kilometers across, which is much, much larger than thought. Previous estimates, based strictly on computer models, show the asteroid was only about 80 kilometers in diameter. Writing in the journal Nature, scientists from Rhode Island's Brown University suggest that the asteroid that formed the Imbrium Basin was so enormous that it could have been classified as a protoplanet, which is an object that later can become a planet. The scientists say their findings also suggest that the early solar system was filled with protoplanet-sized asteroids. The researchers made their findings after conducting experiments at NASA's Vertical Gun Range at the Ames Research Center in Mountain View, California. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to International Edition here on VOA. We are glad you could join us. Find us anytime at voanews.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zubair El-Tayeb. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Prominent independent social researcher and political commentator Khaim Lai was shot and killed in Phnom Penh on Sunday, July 10th. "Let me share my condolences for the dead. I condemn this brutal act," Prime Minister Hun Sen said in a Facebook post later that day. He also called on authorities to take strong action in the case and try to control and strengthen security in order to protect the safety of people across the country. In a Facebook post, Sam Rangsi, the president of the opposition Cambodia National Rescue Party, strongly condemned the killing. "Mr. Khaim Lai was a dignified son of Cambodia who actively participated in the fight for democracy and justice for the Khmer people," he wrote. "I never thought that I was going to live long," Mr. Lai reportedly said. "One day I might die or be shot to death, but as long as I live, I will say what others dare not to. No one can buy me or make me not speak out." We are deeply saddened and concerned by reports of the tragic killing of prominent Cambodian political commentator Dr. Khaim Lai, said John Kirby, Assistant Secretary and State Department spokesperson, in a statement. "We offer our sincere and profound condolences to his family, friends, and colleagues. The United States," he said, "is following developments in this case closely," noting the Cambodian government's call for an investigation, and urged that authorities ensure this process be thorough and impartial.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. for a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
It's 4 hours.